This morning I want to talk about the two crucifixions of Christ. You see, Mark and Luke tell radically different stories about the death of Christ. Of course, the facts are the same because Jesus only did die once. But the tenor and the emotional impact of each one of the stories is dramatically different. What I'd like to show this morning is that there's more than one lesson we can get from this one important event that we're here to remember this morning. Let's look first at Mark's account of the death of Jesus. It's in Mark chapter 15. And we'll scan through the verses and get a picture of what's going on. So Mark 15, verse 1, Jesus is delivered to Pilate. Early in the morning, the chief priests and the whole council held a consultation, and binding Jesus, they led him away and delivered him to Pilate. Verses 2 through 5, you take a look there, Pilate questions Jesus. He spends some time trying to interview Jesus, interrogate him. But Jesus doesn't say a thing to Pilate. And there's this long section, verses 6 through 14, where Pilate tries to release Jesus. He tries to convince the Jews that he should let them go, but the Jews won't have any of it. So in verse 15, you see, washing his hand, wishing to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas for them. And after having Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. So Jesus is condemned to death by Pontius Pilate. Verses 16 through 19, Jesus is mocked and beaten by the Roman soldiers. And in verse 20, after they had mocked him, they took the purple robe off him and put his own garments on him, and they led him out to crucify him. In verse 21, we see Simon of Cyrene carries the cross. They compel Simon to carry the cross. Now notice that Jesus says nothing during this whole time. And in verse 25, the soldiers crucify Jesus, and still he says nothing. Verse 29, those passing by hurl insults at him, wagging their heads and saying, "Ha, you are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Save yourself and come down from the cross." So the passersby mock him. And in verse 31, the Jewish leaders mock him. And look at verse 32. Both of the thieves that were on the cross with him were also insulting him. Jesus is silent through all this, until the very end, verse 34, when he utters up this cry, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And in verse 36, someone takes a pole, and they give Jesus a sponge with some sour wine on it to drink. And in verse 37, Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. And look at verse 38. Immediately, the curtain in the temple is ripped in half. The veil is torn in two. And it ends, will end here in verse 39, when the centurion who was standing right in front of him saw the way he breathed his last, he said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." When you read this account in Mark, it's a very emotional and pathetic scene. Jesus is silent, as if he's in shock, just kind of stumbling along from one thing to the next. And when he does speak, it's to question God about why this is happening to him. Jesus has been rejected by everyone. He's betrayed by his own. He's denied 3 times by his closest follower. He's abandoned by every one of his disciples. He's rejected by the Jewish leaders. He's condemned by the Roman authorities. He's mocked by the priest. He's mocked by the passersby. He's even mocked by the two thieves being crucified with him. It's reasonable that under these circumstances, Jesus would feel forsaken and alone. This is a terribly sad and depressing moment. Jesus is in the absolute depths of despair and heart-wrenching anguish. And that is how he dies. Mark wants us to feel that pain. Mark wants us to feel the Lord's suffering. Mark wants us to appreciate how terrible a thing this was. Mark doesn't want us to take solace in the fact that God really was there with Jesus. Mark wants us to realize that Jesus died in agony, all alone and questioning what was going on. But Mark doesn't leave us there. You notice that immediately after the death, this veil rips in half, and the centurion makes this confession. The curtain ripping in half in Mark shows that with the death of Jesus, God is now made available to his people directly. Not through the Jewish priest's sacrifice in the temple, but that's opened up, and we have direct access to God. Jesus' death has brought atonement. We're no longer separated from God by a ceremonial veil. We have direct access to the love and the mercy of our Father. And the first person to realize this, it wasn't his followers. It wasn't even the Jewish onlookers or the religious leaders, but it was a Roman centurion. It's a Gentile who realizes that Jesus' death brings salvation. And it's Gentiles who are going to continue to recognize this years after his death. Mark gives us the facts of what happened on that mournful day, but he provides us with a moving message that ultimately ends in hope. A message of hope of salvation for every one of us here. But it's a message for those who suffer. It's a message that understands what it's like to experience pain and misery and sadness. And even if you don't know why you're suffering, the message is clear. God knows why you're suffering. And God is watching. And God cares. God's working behind the scenes to make sure that your suffering is redemptive. God's purposes are worked through our suffering, not by avoiding it. Even when those purposes are not obvious at the moment. Jesus suffered silently, strengthened by the knowledge that God was in control of what lay ahead of him. Makes me think of what we read in Acts chapter 8. If you want to look at Acts chapter 8, verses 17 and 18. Acts 8, verse 17. And since we are God's children, we will share his treasures. For everything God gives to his Son, Christ, is ours too. But if we are to share his glory, we must also share his suffering. Yet what we suffer now is nothing compared to the glory he will give us later. So when we face struggles and when we feel like we're not going to make it through another week, that's all the more reason for us to come here. That's the reason for us to reach out on Sunday morning, to take this bread and this wine and remember the suffering that our Lord endured for us. Let's look at the other crucifixion. Let's look at Luke chapter 23. In Luke 23, we get a completely different story. Just like in Mark, Jesus is betrayed by Judas. He's denied by Peter. He's rejected by the Jewish leaders. And just like in Mark, chapter 23, verse 1, he's delivered to Pontius Pilate. But look what happens in verse 3. When Pilate asks him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answers him. In verse 4, Pilate tells the Jewish leaders that he finds no fault in Jesus. Pilate said, "I find no guilt in this man." He's not mocked, and he's not beaten by Pilate's soldiers. In verses 6 through 7, Pilate tries to get Herod to deal with Jesus, and he sends Jesus to Herod. And in verse 11, it's Herod's soldiers who mock Jesus before Pilate finds him guilty. Look at verse 14. In verse 14 of Luke 23, Pilate tells the Jewish people again he finds no fault in Jesus. Pilate states that Herod didn't find any fault in him either. So Pilate spends from verse 15 all the way down to verse 23 trying to release Jesus, but the Jews won't have it. So in verse 24, Pilate pronounced sentence that their demand be granted, and Jesus is condemned to death. In verse 25, Jesus is led away to be crucified, and Simon of Cyrene is again compelled to carry his cross. But you notice, Jesus is not silent on his way to the crucifixion. Look at verse 28. He speaks to a group of women. He warns them about the coming destruction that they will face. He says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the breasts that never nursed.'" Jesus doesn't seem to be in shock about what's going on. He seems to be in control of the situation. And he appears to be more concerned about the fate of others than of his own. He spends time talking to Pilate. He spends time talking to these women on the way to the cross. And he's not silent when he's nailed to the cross either. Look at verse 34. He prays, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Again, he seems more concerned about those who are doing this terrible thing to him than he is for himself. In verse 35, Jesus is mocked by the Jewish leaders. In verse 36, he's mocked by the Roman soldiers. But look what happens in verses 39 to 41. He's not mocked by both men being crucified with him. Instead, one of them mocks him, but the other rebukes the first for doing so, insisting that while they deserve what they're getting, Jesus has done nothing wrong. Over and over again in Luke's gospel, we see this insistence that Jesus is innocent. And in verse 42, the thief asks for Jesus to remember him in the kingdom. And in verse 43, Jesus says, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Again, Jesus seems to be looking out for the welfare of those around him, those who crucified him and those who watched and those who were crucified with him. He isn't questioning or wondering about what's happening. He seems very calm, very much in control of the situation. He knows what's about to occur, and he knows what will happen afterwards. He knows that when he wakes up, he'll be with God. His concern is for those who also have to suffer through this tumultuous time. So he seeks to comfort and encourage anyone he comes in contact with. And at the end, in verse 44, darkness comes over the land. And in verse 45, the curtain is ripped. While Jesus is still alive, the curtain is ripped. You see, his death represents this hour of darkness for the Jews, and it marks the judgment of God against the Jewish people. The ripped curtain represents that God is rejecting the Jewish system of worship, which is symbolized by the temple. And in the end, Jesus calls out a prayer. In a loud voice, strong and full of confidence, he says, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." This is not a Lord who feels abandoned or forsaken. This is not a Lord who wonders why he has to go through this desertion, this pain, this death. This is a Lord who feels God present with him the whole time, and he's comforted by the fact that God is on his side. And he takes that comfort and tries to comfort others. He's totally cognizant of what is happening to him and why. And he's confident of what's going to happen next. And he commits himself to the loving care of his father. And look what the centurion says, just to confirm his innocence one more time. The centurion says in verse 47, "Surely this was a righteous man." Luke's account of the crucifixion is completely different than Mark's. Luke's message to us is one of confidence and hope. Rather than stressing like Mark did about how God is at work behind the scenes, even if we don't understand why these terrible things are happening to you, Luke wants us to understand that sometimes you just have to be strong. You just have to persevere. Luke wants us to understand that often suffering is necessary for the rewards of being with Jesus in paradise, and that it will soon be over. Luke wants us to be confident. He wants us to be calm and in control, even when terrible things are happening all around us, knowing full well that this too will pass, and the reward is to come. Luke wants us to keep our eyes on Jesus, which makes me think of Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews 12, verses 2 and 3. Keep your eyes on Jesus, on whom our faith depends from start to finish. He was willing to die a shameful death on the cross because of the joy he knew would be his afterward. Now he's seated in the place of highest honor beside God's throne in heaven. Think about all he endured when sinful people do such terrible things to him, so that you don't become weary and give up. There is only one death. There is only one burial and one resurrection. But clearly, in Mark and Luke, there's two completely different stories. Two distinct and different, yet valid and complete understandings of the same event. When you read through the Gospels and you see different versions of the same story, don't just try to piece them together and blend them into some homogenous version. I think God intends us to hear from multiple writers about completely different, yet equally helpful interpretations of the same verse. I think there's probably more than two crucifixions. I haven't spent much time reading John. And I'm sure that there are others that I haven't even noticed. And maybe you've always looked at it in a completely different way. Maybe your picture, your version of this is different than the two I said. I think that God intends each one of us to be spoken to directly by this event, this death of our Lord, this thing that's so central to our faith and our beliefs. The whole Bible is intended to be read and understood and interpreted by each one of us. That's the beauty, I think, and the value of us reading together, of us studying together, speaking and sharing the Bible together. Here on Sunday morning and Wednesday nights at class, and whenever we get together, there isn't simply one way to look at things. There isn't only one lesson for us to be gained. This death that we're here to remember this morning touches each one of us. And it touches each one of us in a different place, depending on where we are. And surely, as each one of us is individual and unique, this death speaks to us in a different way. One is not wrong and one is not right. One's not better, one worse. As long as this message of salvation, represented in the bread and wine, comes to you personally, not just to you as a Christadelphian or not to me or not to anyone else, but comes to you personally and speaks to you, as long as you hear the story of the crucifixion, then that death was not in vain.